call this meeting of the commission to order. All the representatives of the commissions are present. I'm Chris Garland, Lieutenant Governor's designee. I'm joined today by the State Controller's Deputy Controller, Alan Gordon, and Karen Finn, representing the Director of Finance. For the benefit of those of you in the audience and watching us online, the State Lands Commission manages state property interests in over 5 million acres of land, including mineral interests. Specifically, the Commission has jurisdiction in filled and unfilled tide and submerged lands, navigable waterways, and state school lands. The Commission also has responsibility for the prevention of oil spills at marine terminals and offshore oil platforms, and for prevention of the introduction of marine invasive species into California's marine waters. Today, we'll hear requests and presentations concerning the leasing, management, and regulation of these public, sovereign, and school land property interests and the activities occurring or proposed thereon. The first item of business will be adoption of the minutes from the Commission's May 23rd, 2013 teleconference meeting. Before we go there, we have an explanation of how the voting will proceed today. So from our Executive Director.
Yes, because both constitutional offices are being represented by alternates. Only one of the alternates can vote. Finance can always vote.
Okay. Thank you. So with that, yes, may I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
I'll second.
Having a motion and a second, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And we have a unanimous, been unanimously adopted.
Mm-hmm. Unanimous.
Technically.
Yes.
The next order of business is the executive officer's report. Ms. Lucchese, may we have the report?
Yes, I just have three short items I would like to mention. First, I wanted to highlight the format of the new agenda for the commission meeting, identifying the continuation of rent items to be acted upon by the executive officer pursuant to the commission's adopted delegation of authority just at the meeting in April. So it provides notice to the public about the actions that I will be taking per the commission's delegation of authority. Second, as you may have heard, the Brooklyn Basin transaction, also known as the Oak to Ninth Project, closed escrow a couple weeks ago on June 10th. The State Lands and its staff and the Attorney General's office have been involved in the title settlement and land exchange side of this transaction to facilitate development at the site since 2003. At full development, the public trust lands involved will be remediated and improved to provide more than 30 acres of parks and open space immediately adjacent to the Oakland waterfront, and will result in the renovation of two recreational marinas. And Joe and I, in particular, spent many years working on this personally. So we're very excited to see that transaction close. And to be honest, in the grand scheme of things, 10 years is not a long time on things we work on. And third, I also want to acknowledge that the State Lands Commission is celebrating its 75th anniversary this month. Specifically, it was created on June 11th, and we had an exhibit of about four panels in the Capitol Rotunda acknowledging and celebrating the Commission's successes over these 75 years. We have also information on our website about this anniversary, and we also have a legislative resolution passed by both the Senate and the Assembly acknowledging and celebrating the Commission's 75th anniversary. So I just want to acknowledge this since this is the June meeting. And that concludes my executive officer's report.
Thank you. The next order of business will be adoption of the consent calendar items C1 through 90. I believe we may have something to pull those. So, Ms. Lucchese, if you would, can you indicate any removed items?
Yes. Items C06, C39, C47, C58, C62, C69, C86, and C90 are removed from the agenda and will be considered at a later time. Item C34 will be moved to the regular item because we have an individual here who would like to comment on that item.
I would like to move adoption.
I'd like to move adoption of the consent calendar with the exception of items 06, 39, 47, 58, 62, 69, 86, and 90, which will be put over, and then item 34, which will be put on regular business calendar for later today.
And then can I ask, item 91, which is action to support legislation, will we?
Yeah. We're taking that up just
okay.
next.
Okay. Okay, separate. Thank you. So just through 90 we're talking
yes,
about, right?
Yes,
then I will
90.
Second the motion.
Excellent. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak on an item that's still on the consent calendar? Thank you. So we'll take these up as a as indicated in the motion. We'll take these up for a single vote. We have a motion and a second, so all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And the consent items, as indicated, are approved. The next item is on the calendar is C-91. Ms. Lucchese, is C-91 going to remain on the agenda?
No, it will be pulled from this agenda.
Excellent.
To be heard at another time.
Thank you. The next item of business is the regular calendar. And why don't we start with the polled item, C-34.
Right.
May we have the staff presentation?
Good morning, commissioners. Should I sit or?
Whatever
yes,
you're
please.
Most comfortable.
Okay. All right, my name is Ninette Lee, and I'm a public land manager with the Commission's Land Management Division. I'm here to present information on calendar item 34. This item recommends authorization of a lease between the Commission and the applicant, Copyright Services Limited, for the use of state lands for an existing pier, boat lift, and two mooring buoys at Lake Tahoe, adjacent to the applicant's lakefront parcel. And I just have two slides of photos. This one shows the pier, and there are three mooring buoys adjacent to the applicant's parcel. So the applicant is requesting approval for a third mooring buoy adjacent to its lakefront parcel, in addition to the pier, boat lift, and two mooring buoys. As brief background, the first lease between the Commission and the applicant was issued in 1958, and at that time, staff was unaware of buoys offshore of the lessee's lakefront parcel. In 1982, the Commission authorized the applicant's request for a lease for three existing mooring buoys along with the pier. Upon expiration of that lease, the Commission authorized a new five-year lease in 1993 for the pier and three buoys. In October 1993, staff conducted a site inspection and observed four mooring buoys offshore of the applicant's parcel. Staff informed the applicant by letter that two of the buoys must be removed in order to comply with Tahoe Regional Planning Agency ordinances. It was at this time that staff had started to actively participate with TRPA and other agencies with presence at Lake Tahoe to improve coordination and efficiency when reviewing applications for shore zone projects and existing improvements. TRPA had informed Commission staff that its ordinances allowed no more than two buoys per private lakefront parcel. Therefore, staff was directed by management to bring leases in conformance with TRPA ordinances. In 1994, the applicant confirmed that the two buoys had been removed, and in the same year, the Commission approved a lease amendment removing the third buoy as an authorized improvement. The last...
Can I stop you right there? So three total were removed, till we're down to one?
No, so there were four buoys out there, and they removed two buoys, but the fourth buoy wasn't authorized under the lease. The third one was. So what the commission staff did is they amended the lease to exclude that third buoy as an authorized improvement. So they were down to two buoys at that time, and it was staff's understanding that they had removed two buoys, so they only had two buoys adjacent to its parcel. So the last, most recent lease for the pier and two buoys was issued in 1998. In the current lease application, the applicant provided a copy of a buoy permit issued by TRPA in March 2010 for three mooring buoys adjacent to the lakefront parcel.
This interrupt. I'm sorry. So that TRPA authorized three again.
Right.
Okay.
This was under their new ordinances adopted in 2008.
Yeah. Right.
And then Nanette will take it from there.
All right.
So, yeah, like Jennifer said, this permit was issued under the grandfather clause of the new shore zone ordinances adopted by TRPA in October 2008. In 2010, the TRPA buoy permits issued as a result of the adoption of the 2008 TRPA ordinances were found to be invalid by the U.S. District Court. The court's decision was later upheld in the Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals.
Can you stop? I just want to make sure I'm tracking this all the way.
Yeah.
So TRPA gives an extra buoy. Who brought the lawsuit against the TRPA authorized third buoy?
Well, it was a number of environmental groups that challenged the ordinances as a whole.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to facilitate. Yeah. So it was the ordinance. It wasn't this specific.
No.
It was the entire TRPA new ordinance in 2010, okay.
eight
that was now ruled invalid by the district court. Did it go up to appeal?
Yes.
This is okay. All right.
Scorekeeper here. Okay.
All right, so the effective TRPA shore zone ordinances have reverted to those regulations in place prior to October 2008, and these regulations do not have provisions for grandfathering. Therefore, staff advised the applicant that authorization of the third mooring buoy cannot be recommended because of the conflict with TRPA's current code. Staff has also determined that because all but two mooring buoys were supposed to have been removed in 1994, the third buoy should not have qualified under the grandfather clause in TRPA's 2008 ordinances.
So let me again, I just want to make sure before we get too far down the line. So, all right. So the third buoy was supposed to have been removed a long time ago. The property owners apparently did not remove it, then filed to have that grandfather the essentially the trespass buoy as a grandfather under the ordinance that was then ruled invalid anyway.
Correct.
Right.
Okay. All right.
So it was staff's understanding that the buoys, that third buoy had been removed, and there was a letter from the lessee, the applicant.
Okay, I think I'm tracking it
okay.
now.
As a result, staff has included a provision in the proposed lease requiring removal of the third buoy by July 1st of this year. So I'm available to answer any more questions you may have. And a representative for Copyright Services is present and would like to address the commission.
Let's from Copyright.
All right. Yeah. There's one last photo just showing the pier.
Excellent. We've got a request to speak from Jen Briscoe. Come forward. Good to see you.
Thank you. Jan Briscoe on behalf of Mr. and Mrs. Peer, Copyright Services Limited. You know, 10 years is not a long time, except when you're dealing with Shore Zone, in which case 30 years isn't a long time. Mr. and Mrs. Peer had wanted to be here today, and we had asked for a continuance on this item so that they could be represented, and it was only yesterday that we learned we could not continue this item, so we're here sort of without a formal presentation for PowerPoint. Let me try to explain to you sort of what happened between 93 and 2008. At that time, we were trying to come up and develop an ordinance. When Nanette said that TRPA's ordinances require two buoys, that's under their design standards, as if you were a vacant parcel without any buoys at all. then your design standard would be two buoys. However, TRPA's ordinances since 1987, and I have a copy of the code section here if you want to review it, actually do authorize legally existing structures. Any structures in place that are considered legally existing may remain. They may be non-conforming, but they are allowed to remain.
Is your argument that a buoy is a structure?
That is correct. Under the Code of Ordinances, it is defined as such.
And are you arguing that it's legally existing, even though it was in violation of the terms of the lease that they signed?
At that time, we were having this conversation with all of the agencies. And rather than jeopardize their overall lease, they agreed to comply with that, knowing that at the time, because in all of the leases back at that time, there was a condition, a special provision in the leases that said, at such time as TRPA decides on a boring program, then you can come back. And that was sort of our agreement with staff, although loose. We were agreeing that, look, we're not going to go out there and enforce against buoys until TRPA comes up. TRPA was the pivotal agency in the quest for authorizing what we consider legally existing buoys. There are only... I'm sorry.
I want to be sure I understand this. So a lease was signed in 93 requiring removal. So you signed that lease.
That's correct.
Okay. So there's some kind of parallel agreement that you're arguing that even though you signed it, there was some legally enforceable parallel agreement that would say you could have it there anyway?
In 93, there was no active requirement that only two buoys be placed on a property. The owner at the time did not realize that ramification of they had three authorized for many, many years. It was legally existing. And so when the state lands came out and said, well, you've got four, instead of requiring removal of that fourth, and we don't even know that they said it wasn't theirs, but they had it removed. And go back to the three buoys authorized under the lease. The owner felt they didn't have any option to, well, you know, at some point in time, TRPA is going to get their act together. They didn't feel they had any challenge at that time with the commission. You can imagine getting a letter from the State Lands Commission. It is a very daunting thing for a couple like Mr. and Mrs. Pierce. So
any kind of written disclaimer, you know, a signing statement mm-hmm. of some kind that would indicate that was your understanding at the time?
Well, I have probably 3 or 4 years worth of emails going back and forth that we all sort of agreed to this, and I could look at bring those back and talk about. And I don't know if Jennifer, you were involved at that time. We were working with Paul Thayer, and he was looking at the staff. We didn't go out and enforce against any of these others. It was really a holding pattern. Everything was in a holding pattern until TRPA got their act together.
What does that mean, got their act together?
To come up with a shore zoned ordinance that once and for all looked at how we were going to authorize legally existing buoys, and that was the October 2008 ordinance.
I'm going to extend your time, but I'd like to ask Jennifer to step in here.
Yeah, well, I just want to clarify that it was in 1998 that her clients signed the lease authorizing two buoys and a pier, and that lease expired in October 2007. Then the new TRPA ordinances came in 2008, and during that time we did not receive an application or sometime received an application for a new lease, but during that same time the TRPA ordinances were ruled invalid. And so I just want to kind of back up just from, so I'm not clear on what kind of agreements were had between TRPA staff and your clients and that sort of thing, but what I want to back up to is the fact that our leases require, and legitimately so, that the lessee comply with all other applicable regulations and laws. Mm-hmm. And so where we're at, I mean, understanding that TRPA has had some challenges that they've been facing lately, the current ordinances in effect right now do not allow for more than two buoys. Mm-hmm. What I think I heard Jan propose were that, well, it's possible maybe more than two buoys are allowed under a totally separate set of the ordinances if you have a certain interpretation of those ordinances. This is, frankly, pretty new to us, mm-hmm. and it's our understanding that TRPA has not taken a position on that at this time about whether the legal non-conforming existing structures would apply to buoys. Those have typically been applied to piers. So we don't have anything in writing. We have had some conversations with TRPA staff about this, and they are not willing, according to them, to deviate from their current practices nor put anything in writing on this.
Is there anything you'd like to respond to before we get to comments?
Yes, I just wanted to let you know that, in fact, according to TRPA's code, and perhaps we need to continue this so we could have more discussion at staff level, and that would be fine with us. At the very least, I think the fact that TRPA permitted three buoys in 2008, because that was, we were going to come back and do that, that they had been legally existing at one time, we don't feel that this owner should be deprived of that third structure that had been under lease, that should have been under lease. TRPA, I would respectfully disagree with your executive officer on the interpretation because I have the code sections. They haven't gone out and enforced against anyone else. And there are only 35 properties around in the entire lake that actually have a third buoy. That's very, very unusual. In fact, some people had four buoys and five buoys, but the ordinances that were adopted that we expect to come back next year, and all we're asking for here is a placeholder to authorize the structure, because they, when they got their permit from TRPA, they assumed they had the permit for the third buoy. They had complied otherwise all those years ago. We're just here to make sure that when you take away a legally existing structure, you know, you should do so with clear understanding of what that means, and certainly we would consider that a taking, and all we want to do is authorize what has been legally existing on this property and nothing more. Thank you.
I'm going to ask if either of my colleagues have.
I'm actually, the substance of this I don't think we can get to, because under our statutes, we must comply with TRPA regs. We can only authorize a lease based on what TRPA is authorizing. So if this were tearing down a home or even a pier, I might feel very differently. But these buoys, for us at this point in time to require removal, just my understanding, tell me if I have anything wrong here, is just to essentially detach the buoy from the lake bed, and there wouldn't be any significant harm if at a later time TRPA changes and you just reattach the buoy to the lake bed. So I'm inclined to go along with staff, and frankly, I'm much more on the procedural issue of letting you folks work this out with TRPA, and whatever TRPA authorizes, whether two or three, at that point in time, our lease can comply with what the TRPA regs are. Mr. Asconi, do you have any response to that, Ms. Council?
I think that the proper way to proceed, if you want to issue a lease today, is that you have to issue it only for two, and that if TRPA then at some future point allows more than that, the lessee could come in and ask for an amendment to authorize that third lease.
That's my inclination at this point, too. Yeah. Okay. Well, let me have you respond to one thing. What would be the harm suffered by the property owners should we go with that path?
We don't have a problem with that. That's sort of what we thought we were doing when we got three permitted from TRPA. And so I think we certainly want to be in compliance with both TRPA and with the state lands. What we want to do is we want to have the opportunity so that we're not coming back to you and next year when TRPA comes back and says, okay, we're going to go ahead and acknowledge that third buoy. As long as when that happens, we can come back to staff and amend our lease to include that third buoy, that's completely fair, and we're fine with that, as long as that.
I just want to clarify one thing, and maybe I can clarify with Mary, is when we are, it's not just detaching the buoy from the anchor. When we ask for it to be removed, it's removed from the lake bed.
Okay. Right. We will remove
that's
the anchoring.
Occupation.
Excuse me. We will remove the anchoring device until such time as it's authorized. Mm-hmm.
All right, it sounds like we've come to a resolution that's consistent with the actions that this commission has taken on several buoys. Unfortunately, you can add your client's name to a growing list of folks who are unhappy with TRPA. Unfortunately, we are in a position to be kind of have our hands tied So I'd like to move forward if there's no other comments from staff or from Ms. Briscoe. Right. Excellent. In that case, we'll entertain a motion.
Well, let's be sure. The motion is to authorize a lease for two buoys.
I think if you read the staff recommendation, that is consistent with what your wishes are.
Then I will make a motion to adopt the staff recommendation for two buoys at the present time.
And I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded, and I'd like to make it clear for you and your clients that at such time as the changes, the expectation is you'll come back and have discussions with the staff to amend the lease.
Thank you,
Ms. Briscoe.
Thank you.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. As opposed? This measure passes. Thank you so much for the presentation.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
All right. That brings us to the first regular item, which is 93, which is a request of the authority, is to request authority of the executive officer to enter into an agreement to support the development of a feasibility study for to examine the use of shore-based reception and treatment facilities for the management of discharge ballast water in California. May we have the staff presentation?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. My name is Nicole Dabrowski, and I am the Marine Invasive Species Program Manager. I'm here today to request authority for the executive officer to enter into agreement to support a feasibility study of shore-based ballast water treatment in California. In 2006, the legislature passed the Coastal Ecosystems Protection Act, which established California's performance standards for the discharge of ballast water. One of the methods by which vessels may comply with these standards is to discharge ballast to a shore-based reception facility. Unfortunately, there are currently no shore-based facilities in California or the United States that are designed to treat non-indigenous species in ballast water. Some previous research has examined the feasibility of shore-based ballast water treatment in California and at a few select ports in the United States, but these studies have been limited in scope. Therefore, additional research is necessary to focus in detail on the potential of shore-based ballast water treatment to meet the needs of vessels operating in California that will be required to meet California's performance standards for the discharge of ballast water. The Public Resources Code mandates that the Commission identify and conduct any other research determined necessary to carry out the requirements of the division. In order to meet the mandate, staff has determined that the current information gap regarding shore-based ballast water treatment must be addressed. Staff proposes that the Commission fund a study to investigate the feasibility of shore-based ballast water treatment and reception facilities in California. Given the scope of the issue and the importance of the findings to the regulated community and concerned stakeholders, it has been recommended that the study be managed by an independent third party, which would issue the request for proposals, award the contract, and facilitate review of the final report. Staff reviewed and consulted with 9 research groups, joint powers, authorities, and nonprofits in order to select the most qualified project manager. Ultimately, we received 2 proposals from organizations and selected the Delta Stewardship Council as the preferred project manager based on experience, budget, and most importantly, their focus on independent scientific review of the final product. Staff proposes that the Commission fund the Delta Stewardship Council for up to $500,000 from the Marine Invasive Species Control Fund to support project management costs and funds for the contractor to complete the study. The development of the study is critical for the implementation of California's performance standards for the discharge of ballast water in order for the Commission to continue to move expeditiously towards the elimination of the discharge of non-indigenous species into California. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. Any questions of the presenter before we go to comments? We have a growing list of comments on this in the next item.
Maybe I'll just hold my questions as people come and present.
Okay. I know that we may need you as people present to potentially answer questions. Can we add her to the dais?
Oh, of course.
Don't let the power go to your head.
Yeah.
All right, well, as we said that.
As it had.
Wow, you've got a strange definition of power. As we set that up, I'd like to ask Mr. Kolb? Kolb from Sierra Club, California?
Yes.
Lawrence? You have something for us? If you can just give it to our...
Kim, I think he's got something.
If you have, just as we're getting this done, if you have information for the commissioners as you present us, if you wouldn't mind please giving it to Kim in advance so that she can get it around to us, that would be much appreciated. And Mr. Kolb, you're on the clock.
I'm Larry Kolb. I'm representing Sierra Club, California. I am a civil engineer, 30-some-year employee with the Water Quality Control Board in Oakland. So I know this building a little bit. Wanted to say that Sierra Club California supports the idea of a study, and we think that shoreside treatment may well be a viable option, but we agree with the staff that study is a great idea. I think one of the big issues in anything to do with marine terminals and standards for ballast water is enforceability. Can you tell what they're doing and determine if something goes wrong? And that's one of the advantages of shoreside treatment that is probably an important consideration, because if the shippers are not using their onboard facilities, you have to ask the question, is anybody going to be able to tell? I've spent 30 years in implementing the Federal Clean Water Act with permits and inspections and self-monitoring, and that's a system that pretty much works. And to me, I'm not a marine terminal expert by any means, but I sort of wonder how it's going to be possible to have a shipboard that's working under a stopwatch when they get into port. I mean, they're in a hurry to get things done. They have a lot of things to do, and the people who would be implementing these treatment systems on board would be cranking something up that's been dormant, getting it going, hopefully doing it right. To me, that I can see potential for trouble on that kind of thing. So, there. On the other hand, we certainly understand the concerns of the shippers. They don't want to pay twice, once for onboard stuff and then once for their share of... the last thing I wanted to say was that to me it seems reasonable while a study is going forward to have a moratorium on the schedule. On the other hand, I think it would be ideal if it was a defined moratorium, 2 years or something, rather than just open-ended. My experience has been that when you have an open-ended moratorium, time has a way of flying. So defining the term, I think, would be helpful as well. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Next speaker is Mark Holmes, the program director from the Bay Initiative. And then, just so you're preparing, David Boland would be up next.
Thank you, Chairman Garland and commissioners. My name is Mark Holmes. I'm program director for the Bay Institute. I served on the advisory committee for ballast water that resulted in the recommendation to the legislature to enact the standards that were ultimately adopted in 2006. I also served from 2003 through 2009 as a Senate appointee to the CalFed Bay Delta Authority. I'm here to speak in support of this item. This is the result of some intense discussions, challenging discussions that were hosted and led by Commissioner Gordon, and I'd like to express our gratitude for his dedication and work to that and think that we have a good outcome here. So thank you very much.
Can I ask you a question? Sorry.
If you wouldn't.
You were kind of the person I was looking for then. If you were back in the days of this legislation, at the time it was being considered, was there known do we know there was no technology at that time for onshore treatment?
It's slightly more complex than that. Sorry. We knew there was a technology for onshore treatment, that you could treat ballast water in existing plants and it would effectively meet the standards. The challenge was that there was nothing designed specifically to get the ballast water from ships to existing plants, and there were some problems with the use of existing plants in salt water, so the question was raised about whether you needed to construct dedicated plants for ballast water treatment. It's one of the things that the study will examine.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Boland, And then after Mr. Boland will be Mark Holmes. Oh, no, we just did Mark. Mm-hmm. Oh, I got two for you. You also want to speak on 94. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Thank you, Commissioner Garland and other commissioners. My name is David Boland with the Association of California Water Agencies. And we also supported the 2006 legislation. We are concerned about ecosystem impacts, specifically of invasive species, particularly in the Delta, but near coastal waters in general. I also served on the Technical Advisory Committee way back, and we support the performance standards. We recognize that there's some promise in shore-based technology. There are some issues of cost and management, of course, that have been brought up and probably will be brought up in the reports, and we think that the study will be a great opportunity for us to look at that again in more detail and compare it with all the work that's been done on the ship-based technologies and do a good job of comparing and contrasting the pros and cons. So we think this is a good public policy move, and we support the study. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is John PMSA.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. My name is John Berg, and I'm the Vice President with the Pacific Merchant Shipping Association. We represent many of the shipping companies regulated under this provision. I'm here to speak in qualified support of staff's proposal to encumber the invasive species funds. Fees generated by our industry to perform the study of shore-based treatment. I think staff has done an excellent job in addressing input from all the various stakeholders, developing the scope and framework of the study, and Commissioner Gordon has, I think, done a great job in kind of guiding that process. I should point out, though, that we personally do not believe that shore-based treatment is a viable solution in the long run, for logistical and economic reasons, and I think that probably comes as no surprise to you. I'd like to point out, as some people have already mentioned, that under existing federal law, ships discharging ballast water in U.S. waters, including California, will be installing and using the Coast Guard-approved treatment systems that represent best available technologies. This will occur regardless of the direction that California takes. So for us, also requiring shore-based treatment as a parallel system on top of the federal requirement essentially establishes a direction no other state in the nation or no other country that we know of is pursuing, and I think further puts California in a difficult competitive situation. However, that being said, we do welcome the study and the policy debate that will generate. We believe that the results of that study will reach similar conclusions and hopefully support our position. So thank you very much.
I'd actually, before you go, like to, so you are, you and your or your members are in support of us approving a study, even though you don't necessarily believe the outcome of the study could go against you, or at a minimum may wind up proving that your position at this point is correct, that it's not a feasible outcome. And I'd just like to say thank you for that, because I know it's your members who pay into this fund. And the fact that you're willing to let the science speak and allow us to have that debate says a lot about the leadership of your organization. I'd like to thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much.
We'll see you back for 94. And finally, Andrew Cohn, Director of the Center of Research in Aquatic Bioinvasions. Mr. Cohn, thank you.
Thank you. My name's Andrew Cohen. I'm a marine and aquatic biologist, and I've been working on invasions and ballast water issues for about 20 years. I served on the panel that developed the California standards, and I've served as a technical advisor to the Lands Commission staff since then. I want to first say thank you to Commissioner Gordon, to Executive Director Lucchese, and to the staff who worked on this project, in particular Nicole Dabrowski and Chris Brown. I think over the last year, an enormous amount of progress has been made on developing this study, developing the scope of work, And I appreciate that we're going to manage this through a third party and that you've selected an excellent choice as a third party manager. And I want to recognize that, as well as the substantial increase in funds that have been provided for this. My interest in this, in the study here, is that shipboard treatment at this point does appear to be the best available, or perhaps the only available way that the State Lands Commission can implement the laws. And so it's important that there an effective study of it be done that is of the highest technical and scientific integrity, and that is done as expeditiously as possible. And I have three areas of concern in regard to that. The first one is a bit of a dilemma in that yes?
I'm going to interrupt you just briefly. You're now speaking about onboard shipboard. We're dealing with a study on onshore right now, not...
Did I say shore onboard? I meant to say shore-based. They're all okay. I've just misspoken.
So we're on point.
This is the shore-based study, and it's as I said, I'm thankful for the progress that has been made. It's a terribly important study to be done and has to be done in the right way. And my three remaining areas of concern are these. The first is a bit of a dilemma because it's a concern that, as Commissioner Gordon and Commissioner Garland are aware, that we have information that appears to show that the shipboard study, which I know is the next item, that the shipboard study does not accurately represent the data that has been done on testing these systems, and that because that data is inaccurate throughout that report, the conclusions are not right. And so the concern is that if the State Lands Commission goes ahead and issues a report at this time which is not based on accurate data and has incorrect conclusions about ballast water treatment, that it will be that will potentially compromise the integrity of any study that they try to conduct, even through a third party at that point.
And the engagement of the third party doesn't address that concern for you? Are you certain that there is some kind of undue influence between the state lands and the independent third party?
The concern I'm expressing here is based on having worked for many consulting firms and done contracts of this type in the past. And there are many fine engineering and other consulting firms such as might be involved in this, but they do like to try and figure out what the funders want and give it to them, as anybody would. And the first thing the contractor is going to do is read the State Lands Commission reports on ballast water technology. And if those come to conclusions that are not correct, which are not based on accurate data, then my concern is that that will affect the integrity of the report. And the dilemma is that, of course, that's the next item on the agenda, the issue of that report.
And I appreciate that you have two more points that you'd like to make, but your time is up. Before we get to that, are you calling into question the integrity of the third party that we're engaging?
No.
Because what you just said is your experience is that the third party will give us what they think we want.
No, I wasn't talking
about... That would call into question the integrity of the scientific community over in, okay. that we're dealing
I wasn't talking about the third-party administrator.
I'd like to ask staff to...
May I state that Dr. Cohen is the one that recommended that we go with the Delta Stewardship Council, and one of the key reasons we chose the Delta Stewardship Council is because of their focus on independent scientific review of the final product. So there will be an independent body of scientists reviewing the final report.
I think that keeps science.
Yes,
panel.
I keep right. that. Okay. I think that keeps us about as independent as it can possibly get.
Excellent. Thank you. If you would, because I asked so many questions, I'd like to extend to you the ability to get to your last 2 points, if you wouldn't mind getting to them quickly.
I will, although I'm not sure that you characterized my concern. It was not at all with the Delta Science, with that third-party administrator. I was talking about the ultimate firm that might be doing the work. And the influence not of staff, but of the report that would be issued.
So your concern is that the Delta folks won't have the ability to choose a contractor that you believe will give us a study that is free of bias. So you're not impugning the Delta folks, you're impugning the folks they might hire.
No, I don't think I'm saying that either. I'm saying in the real world, people are influenced by the positions that their funders take. All of us are under that influence. We struggle to deal with it in the scientific world and not give in to that. But we do look to that, and frankly, everybody does whenever they're hired by somebody. So that was my concern. I don't feel like I need to go on about it. I just want to make sure it was clear.
I'm going to actually cut in right here real quickly, which is just to state for the record that, and either of the other two commissioners please interrupt me. I mean, I don't think we have any pre-existing bias as to where this thing is supposed to go. So we, as the three parties that are voting for the funding, the idea that the contractor would have some direction that we are that they believe we are following is just, I think it's inaccurate. I have no clue. I mean, I've spoken to Mr. Berg and Mr. Schott. I know the position of the industry and the ports. I've heard from the Sierra Club and the Natural Resources Defense Council. I don't think any of us know where this thing goes, because what's pretty clear, and one of the reasons that you have been incredibly successful in pushing us towards doing this study, is the fact that the existing data is at least 10 years old. We don't know what it shows. We wouldn't be spending $500,000 if we thought we already knew the answer. This is not a rubber stamp report. I mean, I have been troubled from the beginning as I've worked on this over the fact that the onboard systems don't seem to work. And if there were an alternative, and I've been searching now for over 2 years to try to find that alternative, if it turns out that shore-based is feasible and gets us where we need to go, and the contacts I've had with folks from the State Water Board, they seem to believe that the technology exists, so it's going to come down to feasibility from a financial standpoint. As one commission, and I think I'll speak for the other two, we're completely open to that idea. So I'm not quite sure where a contractor would get any idea that there is any preordained direction that we want this thing to go.
I want to make sure clear that I'm not in any way questioning the integrity of the State Lands Commission staff, the third-party manager, or the firm that ultimately may do the work. But shall I explain what the concern is?
Then please explain the first concern, because it sounds to me like we've gotten to a point where you've raised a concern and now backed off of the concern. So is this a concern, or what is the reason for this concern? Because it sounds like now you've backed off. It's not a problem with the staff. It's not a problem with the commissioners. It's not a problem with the third party that at your suggestion we've engaged, and it's not a problem with the ultimate contractor. So what is the actual concern here with your first concern?
My concern is the impending issuing of a report which on ballast water technology, which does not reflect the actual data, the actual test data on ballast water technology, and comes to conclusions that are not supported by the data. It's that report that I fear, and based on my experience, suspect might influence the way the ultimate contractor thinks about this.
You're now contradicting yourself for a third time.
I don't believe I am.
On to the next two issues.
Okay.
The next two issues.
The next issue that I'm concerned about is that the RFP, you know, this is, as near as I can tell, intended to be a technical assessment of the issue of shore-based treatment, but the RFP provides for, as it's currently drafted, provides for continuing involvement by stakeholders. We've had an enormous amount of stakeholder input to the scope of work over the past year. Initially, there was a concern about having adequate input. My sense is that those who were initially concerned, the ports, from my conversations with them, I don't know if Tim Schott will be here to address it himself, but his basically opinion was, we've had more than enough. This has gone on long enough. We should get on with the study. My concern is if there's continuing stakeholder involvement in terms of further scoping by stakeholders, in terms of review of reports as they come up, that it will tend to politicize what should be a purely technical assessment. And so I would just recommend against that.
And your third, I'll ask staff to respond when you finish with your third.
My third concern is about cost. There's been a very substantial increase in the amount of funding for this, but I don't see that it's been developed on any assessment of what these the many tasks in the scope of work will actually end up taking. I've tried to go through the exercise. We talked about doing this, proposed doing this in these meetings with Commissioner Gordon about looking at the past study that was done, seeing how much that was covered by the current, and assessing it forward. We came up with estimates of between $480,000 and $785,000 for that. John Berg recently suggested that an element in that scope of work that was put in essentially at his request could be removed. That might drop the cost $30,000 to $50,000. I'm not sure, but we can look at the estimate that I had put together. But it suggests that it's going to be somewhat more than the roughly $425,000 to $450,000 that apparently would be available to do the scope of work when you consider what the third-party administrator will take and what some of the other the stakeholder meetings, if they are continued, would take. And so it seems to me it, we're closing in on the ballpark, but they're not we're not quite there. And I would ask that I would like to provide you with that estimate. I would like you to ask, and I'm not saying it's the right estimate or that we've got the right numbers, because frankly we had to guesstimate a bunch of this stuff. But I would ask you to take a look at it, take a look at the methodology, and consider it
as you
go forward to come up with the cost.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you spending the extra time and answering questions. And we'll see you back on 94, I'm sure. Staff would like to get your input on some of the
things regarding involvement of the stakeholders. The RFP as written was written per commission procedures, but the RFP as will be issued will come from the Delta Stewardship Council. So ultimately, the procedures for how they issue it will be dependent on the Delta Stewardship Council's procedures. As they have indicated to us, they wish to keep the stakeholders informed and will continue to do so, so that they are aware of the process, but they don't have any intention of basing decisions on the entire process on stakeholder comment. I mean, the most important part is just keeping everyone informed of what's going on. We can make sure that is written into the contract with them. Regarding the does that address
that
this?
Addresses that
regarding the cost estimates, we have not received any written information, as Dr. Cohen just presented, regarding those estimates. At times, they did state that they would look into additional costs, but we were never provided with specific information that, you know, this would be a cost based on these reasons. So we based the $500,000 on there have been some port level studies that have been done, so we looked at the number of hours associated with the development of those studies. We looked at the rates of environmental contractors that have worked for the state in the past. We looked at the number of hours associated with the development of environmental impact reports, as this may be on similar scope, although we realize that, you know, it's not a perfect example. And based on that and the budget that we have available, we have gone forward with up to $500,000. Certainly, if there was a need for more money, we could come back to the commission to request more.
Okay.
Thank you. Commissioner Gordon, I know you wanted to make a comment.
Let me start with a more general comment, and this is for everyone who's worked on this. I've done, in the course of my career, lots and lots of negotiations, more than I can count. And the parties involved here, from the industry side, from the government side, the State Water Board, NGOs, and the staff at State Lands Commission, I think did as good a job as I have ever seen of sitting down, discussing their agreements, their disagreements, and working towards a final product that has remarkable buy-in, both on the report and on this RFP. So I would like to commend, everybody keeps giving me some credit. All I really did was sit there at the head of the table and let you folks work out your issues. And I think you guys did a fantastic job, considering how strongly the positions were felt by all parties. It was government at its best, frankly. All of you gave on some things, and all of you got some things that were important. And I think that the final product represents something you can all be proud of. You know, so often nowadays in the public sphere, compromise is viewed as somehow giving up your core values. And I think here everyone's core values were represented in the final product. And it was a better product because none of us had revealed wisdom as to what the proper direction was going in. So I think you all did a marvelous job in putting out both the report and the RFP. Specifically with regard to the choice of the Delta Stewardship Council and their Science Advisory Board, for full disclosure, when I was with the Senate, I wrote the statute that created both of those entities. And so you will all have a little bit of faith in this. The model we used was given to us by the National Science Foundation. And we worked very closely with the folks at the Watershed Institute at UC Davis in putting together what we thought would be a body that would be able to use scientific data and drive public policy conclusions based on that data, which we thought was the best model and the best way to use scientists. I have complete faith that the folks over there, headed by Chairman Eisenberg, will have the ability to do that without political influence, though if the sense that politics is involved means we have to take into account what the costs of this will be and do a cost-benefit analysis based on the future viability of the ports and the shipping industry, as well as balancing California's environmental interests, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Delta Stewardship Council is uniquely positioned to be an arbiter and make sure that the science is done right. And again, I want to commend Nicole and her staff for getting to a place where that was who they chose to do the final work. So with that, I will say that'll be enough for me. Thank you all very much.
We do have one more speaker, but I want to first associate myself with the comments by Alan about all the players in this. This has been a difficult issue for all of us for 2 years, and I want to particularly thank you, Alan, for stepping up and taking the lead on this and working with all the parties. And while you may characterize it as just sitting at the head of the table, we wouldn't be here without your help.
Thank you.
So thank you for that. And then finally on this issue, Tim Schott.
Thank you, Commissioners. Tim Schott on behalf of the California Association of Port Authorities, which is comprised of the state's 11 commercial publicly owned ports. I'd first like to take issue with Mr. Gordon's statement. Sitting at that head of the table is a lot more than sitting at the head of the table. So we really very much appreciate his efforts and long-term efforts, the Commission's interest in this, staff's diligent work, and Ms. Lucchesi's leadership on the issue. We're kind of in the position of saying, let's rock and roll. Let's get the study done. We did the original study back in 2000, our association did, through a small assistance grant with Cal EPA. That was a $25,000 grant. We put in probably a like amount in terms of in-kind contribution, but no additional cash. And we know that that was a cursory look at the issue. So we appreciate the willingness and the moving forward with this. We're nervous about it. We're very nervous about it, and we believe that the stakeholders should remain involved, not in a decision-making capacity. And I think, frankly, watching all of these exchanges and talking with staff and Mr. Gordon and others about it, I think a lot of it was semantics and the way things were phrased in emails, frankly. I don't think that we are looking for a role in making those decisions. Certainly there are port staff and there are staff with the carriers and environmental folk and water quality folk who should be consulted, who have expertise that needs to be consulted. But we're not talking about the stakeholders having a role in making those decisions or directing the report, simply staying informed and making sure that the folks who are conducting the study know how to get to those people with the expertise. With that, thank you very much.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any more questions for the staff on this? Okay. I would like to make one comment before we get to the staff recommendations, which, depending on if I'm voting, I'm in favor of. Although Alan did so much work on this, I think we should let him vote. But I'm on the record as supporting it. I do want to ask one question of the director, and that's the executive officer, excuse me. We are today authorizing up to $500,000 for the study to be done. I think there are valid concerns about the cost of the study. Do we have enough? Is it too much? And while I don't want to at all impede us moving forward quickly on this, I would like to ask that the commissioners be kept up to date and be given and appraised of what the actual costs are going to be, and have some input on that in approving the ultimate study once we know what those costs are going to be, so that we understand exactly what we're approving.
Is it the pleasure of the commission to add a recommendation to staff's recommendation that would direct staff to report back to the commission for budget approval prior to the award of contract to a contractor by the Delta Stewardship Council? Or would you like to just be kept up to date individually or during the executive officer's report?
And I just for fiscal prudence, I would prefer the first option, but since I'm not voting, one of you are going to have to make that an official request of the.
And I can restate it very specifically for you.
Defer to finance on this, Karen.
Okay. Could you state
so the additional recommendation to be added to the three recommendations already in the staff report is to direct staff to report to the commission for budget approval prior to award of contract to a contractor by the Delta Stewardship Council and transfer of funds by the commission.
I would just ask a question. Is that logistically possible? Timing-wise, would we hold it up, you know, based on the schedule of meetings and such? So,
in all practicality, there is the risk of some delay, but we're talking about a month.
Okay.
And we are talking about a significant amount of money being expended on this study, you know, up to $500,000, potentially more if the commission would wants to authorize additional monies.
Okay. So is it the will to, do you want to have that checked in? I'm fine with that. Last question, is there a requirement in the RFP of a time frame that this has to be completed, or we'll be just listening to what the contractors propose?
At this time, there is not a time limit, but once the funds are encumbered, we have 2 years to pay it out. Otherwise, we would have to push it into another year. So it should,
assuming a couple of years.
It should be able to be completed in that time, and we can certainly add that timeline or at request the Delta, you know, include a timeline in the report.
Okay.
And we can report that back to the commission as
well.
Okay.
Okay. If we're okay with that, then I would support that.
Okay. So we're going to, the motion would be for the three recommendations plus the addition of what the executive officer just laid out.
To report back before, at the most efficient board meeting before awarding the contract.
Yes.
And I'll second that motion.
Okay.
We have a motion and a second. Okay. Those in favor?
Aye.
We have adopted item 93. I'm going to ask here, since we've been going for an hour, if anybody needs a quick break.
I'm fine.
Let's keep going. Thank you. Next up on the agenda is regular item 94. you could have stayed on the dais. Yeah. May we have the staff presentation?
Yes, you may. Again, I am Nicole Dabrowski, the Marine Invasive Species Program Manager. Today, we're here to request approval of the Legislative Report 2013 Assessment of the Efficacy, Availability, and Environmental Impacts of Ballast Water Treatment Systems for Use in California Waters. As I mentioned previously, in 2006, the legislature passed the Coastal Ecosystems Protection Act, which established performance standards for the discharge of ballast water and required the commission to implement them via regulation. Regulations were adopted in 2007, including a phased-in implementation schedule between 2010 and 2016 based on a vessel's ballast water capacity and year of construction. The Coastal Ecosystems Protection Act also requires the commission to prepare or update reports to the legislature assessing the efficacy, availability, and environmental impacts of ballast water treatment technologies to meet the performance standards, and the exact language from the statute is on the screen. If technologies to meet the standards are determined to be unavailable, then the report shall include an assessment of why not. Reports are due 18 months prior to each of the scheduled implementation dates for the standards, and previous reports were approved by the Commission in 2007, 2009, and 2010. The report before you today was initially brought to the Commission for approval in October of 2012. At the October meeting, the Commission requested that staff revise the report to ensure that the report conclusions more thoroughly reflected system performance variability and uncertainty regarding the availability of ballast water treatment systems to meet California's performance standards for the discharge of ballast water. Staff has worked with the State Controller's Office and representatives from the Pacific Merchant Shipping Association, the Western States Petroleum Association, the Bay Institute, the California Association of Port Authorities, the San Francisco Estuary Partnership, the California State Water Resources Control Board, the Cruise Lines International Association, Maersk Enviro Management, and Dr. Andrew Cohen to revise the report, which is now presented to the Commission for approval. The report examines four management strategies and technologies for vessels to comply with the standards, including retention of all ballast water on board, use of potable water as ballast, discharge to a shore-based ballast water reception facility, or use of a shipboard ballast water treatment system. While almost 80% of voyages to California retain all ballast water on board, vessels may need to deballast due to operational or safety concerns. and thus would need a method of ensuring that discharged ballast is in compliance with standards. Potable water may not be an option for many vessels due to the volume of water needed for ballasting and potential costs. Thus, some form of ballast water treatment will be required for the majority of vessels operating in California. Two main platforms for ballast water treatment are shore-based ballast water reception and treatment facilities and shipboard ballast water treatment systems. Currently, there are no shore-based ballast water treatment facilities in California or the U.S., and thus this option is not currently available to the regulated community to comply with California standards. As previously discussed, staff is securing the services of a third-party manager to develop a request for proposals to produce a report examining the feasibility of shore-based treatment in California. Staff reviewed 75 shipboard ballast water treatment systems for this analysis. The available performance data for land-based and shipboard testing of treatment systems is reviewed in the report, including a thorough, transparent discussion of the methods and reasoning behind staff's interpretation and presentation of the data for each of the organism size classes in California standards. Based on that data, staff concludes that no shipboard ballast water treatment systems are currently available to meet all of California's performance standards for the discharge of ballast water. In light of the lack of currently available options for discharging vessels to comply with California's performance standards, staff recommends that the legislature amend Public Resources Code Section 71205.3 to delay implementation of the standards until such time that technologies can be deemed available to meet the standards. This delay is an adaptive approach which will provide time for additional data to be collected on shipboard treatment system installation and performance, and for the shore-based feasibility study to be completed while continuing to move the state towards elimination of the discharge of non-indigenous species into the waters of the state. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. I do want to raise one concern, and it goes back to something someone said earlier, and many of you have heard me say this before on behalf of Lieutenant Governor. You know, we like the idea of California being the point of the sword on environmental issues and on issues in general, and we appreciate the what we're trying to do here and fully support combating invasive species. Part of the recommendation to the legislature was vague in terms of timing, and I would like to when we do eventually go to the legislature, when staff goes to the legislature, I would like to see us try and come up with a reasonable time frame or some metric to suggest to the legislature, not just ask for a blank or a blanket exemption postponing this. Because as we know many times when it comes to industry and innovation and science, many times it's the deadline that we set that drives that innovation, you know, whether it's going to the moon by the end of the decade or any number of others. So I would like to see us make a slightly more specific recommendation to the legislature on timing, if that's doable. With that, do either of the other commissioners have questions for the staff before we get to the public comment?
Not right now.
Ellen? Okay. Well, if you wouldn't mind joining us back on the dais again, we have a we're now going to start referring to them as the usual suspects, because I believe everybody who spoke on 93 wants to speak on 94. And we'll start again with David Bolin. And next will be Mark Holmes.
Thank you, commissioners. Appreciate the opportunity to speak. My name again is David Bolin with the Association of California Water Agencies. And I just wanted to underscore the fact that we did support legislation. We do support the standards. Many of the issues that have been discussed about the need for balancing of environmental regulations and environmental protection are something that we keenly feel as an industry. Public water agencies recognize the need for some strong studies to support the kind of environmental regulations that we like to have that are aspirational in California sometimes. We do understand the technology gap in terms of shipboard treatment, and we support the study, as we just discussed. We support also the postponement. We recognize the fact that we don't aren't able to enforce this and implement this at the current time, and that it's really important to see at least what we can do on the shore-based side, and probably continue to allow for enhancement of technologies on the shipboard side as well, as we recognize this is an international issue and that technology is not always driven by California. So with all that said, I think we also want to support a definite period as opposed to a indefinite moratorium, and we would request that you direct staff to come back with a reasonable period. It was discussed, a defined, say, two-year period was discussed by one of the speakers previously, maybe 5 years. I guess this is a judgment call, and obviously the staff will probably have a better sense about what can be done in the time frame. We recognize the fact the report itself will take at least a year, and then there'll be a need for some assessment of the findings. So a reasonable time frame, and then explicitly communicating that to the legislature. And that's my contribution here. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Mr. Holmes, and then Karen McDonald, McDowell, excuse me.
Thank you, Chairman Garland and Commissioners. Mark Holmes, again. And I'm glad that you raised the issue of the indefinite time frame. You see on my speaker's card that I indicated that we were here to speak in opposition, and that's only for one reason, because there's a surprise in this, and that's the indefinite moratorium. The group that got together agreed on a two-year moratorium, and it was our understanding that at the end of the 2 years that study would be in from onshore-based items. We could review that, and it may be necessary at that point to further extend the moratorium to allow implementation devices to be developed. But it was never the intent to repeal the existing schedule that's in statute for exactly the reason that you described. I would suggest that we don't need to go back and have a conversation about how long the moratorium should be. Everybody agreed on 2 years already. As I say, this was a bit of a surprise, and I think it's going to be problematic if it remains in there. So with that, I would support this. The last thing I would like to say is that I have to echo my colleague Dr. Cohn's comments about concerns about the scientific analysis in the report. We've had extensive conversations with Commissioner Gordon, with the executive officer, Lucchese, pointing out precisely what our concerns are. They're complex, and some of them were resolved, but others were not. That's not going to stand in my way of endorsing this, but as Dr. Cohn suggested to you, and I think I can say accurately that this was his point, the concern is not about anybody's integrity, but the quality of the analysis in the report that will mislead on several points that need to be scrutinized closely. It's not an intentional misleading. It's a difference of opinion about how data should be interpreted and the quality of the data. So the report remains a concern for that reason. I thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you. It's not often we get to flip somebody from opposition to support and without having to have an argument.
Wow, just looking.
Qualified support.
Qualified
support, absolutely. You have a great weekend. Karen McDowell in, this was in opposition too. Maybe we can get a support. Mm. And then John Berg after that.
Yes, my name is Karen McDowell with the San Francisco Estuary Partnership. I'm a PhD marine ecologist and environmental planner. As you know, the San Francisco Estuary Partnership is part of the National Estuary Program and one of the most invaded systems in the world. And we've been participating along with this process because we're very interested in prevention. So we recognize that the commission staff has gone above and beyond to work with the stakeholders to incorporate the comments to improve the report. We agree with the technology assessment and the conclusions of the current technologies cannot meet the standard. And because of that, we also support the need for an advance on the enforcement standards. However, the previous drafts recognized there was a two-year time limit on that advance. And basically, we can't support the latest changes without changing the timeline. And beyond that, we do support the current report, with the exception of having no timeline in the report. We need to move forward with the development of a more robust ballast program, and we must create timelines to address the issue. We also strongly encourage not just the shoreside feasibility study, but current development on the compliance protocols, which would allow for testing, more accurate testing of the systems to get down to the California standard or to detection limits. Both the feasibility study and the continuation of looking at the compliance protocols will help us answer key questions. And I think within a two-year time frame, we should have the answer to some of those key questions. And frankly, the answer might be that shoreside treatment isn't feasible, at least in the near term, and we can't meet the standard, and maybe there's some interim thing that needs to go on. I'm not sure. It'll be interesting to see the results of these reports, but we encourage the development, both of looking at the shoreside treatment and the continued expediency, looking at the shipboard treatment also.
Dr. McDowell, in your opinion, is there a forum right now that is working on developing those compliance protocols? Because that the disagreement between some members of the scientific community and members of the regulated community seemed to be, in my opinion, a lot over those compliance protocols, what they could show, what they couldn't show, and how to interpret the data. Are we moving in the right direction in developing that? Because it strikes me that a parallel course to in the right time frame for developing the shoreside analysis would also require us to get to the end of that 2 years with a good compliance protocol so we won't have these issues in the future.
I think we are moving in the right direction with the compliance protocols, and I know that the commission staff has been working closely with the EPA's ETV program and the Coast Guard to match closely with what their protocols are, although obviously the standards are lower, and so they'll differ slightly, and Nicole might be able to provide more detail on that.
Both the International Maritime Organization, the Coast Guard, and the EPA are working on the development of compliance protocols, more Coast Guard than EPA. But certainly the timeline would sync up with the feasibility study. So.
Excellent.
And there's still going to be, there is some, technical issues, I think, with the way the standard was written up that no one realized when it was first done. So it's complex, but I think we're moving in the right direction, and we need to move on all fronts because nobody knows what the answers are. So,
just clarification. So your only concern is just that there's no specific
time frame? Yes, my only concern is that there's no time frame.
Thank you, and have a great weekend. John Berg, and then Dr. Cohen, and then finally again, Tim Schott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Again, John Berg with Pacific Merchant Shipping Association. I should point out that it feels much more comfortable to finally be on the support side of this issue after several years. I know it's been a lot of hard work for everybody, so I appreciate that. But we do welcome the report's conclusion that there are no treatment systems available, and this is consistent with the findings of other state governments, US EPA, its Science Advisory Board, the International Maritime Organization, the U.S. Coast Guard. So we view that as a positive step. And we also welcome the report's recommendation that the legislature act to delay the implementation schedule. Essentially, we do have a conflict between the statute's mandate of using best available technology and what those technologies can achieve. But I do want to point out that in terms of one aspect of the report we must respectfully disagree with, and that is that there's a suggestion that the challenges to meeting the California standard primarily reside in the lack of detection methods or protocols. It's absolutely true that detection methods are insufficient to confirm the ability to meet California standards, and that's something that's been recognized and was just commented on. However, we should note that existing detection methods already demonstrate high failure rates in meeting those standards. Logic dictates that more rigorous detection methods can only find similar, if not greater, failure rates. So I think it's clear that, at least for the near term, these systems are probably not going, onboard systems are not going to be reaching the California standard. And that's something we're just going to have to deal with at some point. This should come as no surprise to you. My solution to this is that we would recommend that the legislature adjust the standards and implementation schedule to harmonize with the Coast Guard and the EPA. This allows ships calling multiple jurisdictions throughout the world, throughout the country, to be regulated in a harmonized fashion. And this is a position we've held, I think, since the beginning of this process. The only last thing I'd like to point out is that in regards to Commissioner Gordon's comment about these systems not working, I think it's fair to say these systems do work. They actually achieve essentially a four-log or 10,000-time reduction in the number of organisms that are coming out of ballast water. So it's not as if these things are just failing in terms of achieving any kind of environmental protection. The fact of the matter is they're just not reaching that point of the California standards. And so those systems will be put on board the ships, as I mentioned earlier. We will be achieving and benefiting from those environmental protections regardless of the directions we eventually choose. And thank you all for your help. If there's any questions.
Any questions
no,
from Ms.
No,
Berg?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cohn, Dr. Cohn, excuse me.
Thank you. As I indicated earlier, my one concern with this report is about its technical accuracy at this point at the draft report. I first looked at this at the request of Chris Ciani when he was acting manager of the program last summer. And as a technical advisor, he asked me to look at the report. What I found is that the report presented data based on the tests that had been done of these treatment systems to test compliance with IMO standards. And what I found was when I looked at the actual test reports, the data were different from what was being presented in the State Lands Commission report on a large scale. So that, for example, for one of the treatment systems that had been characterized by the previous reports as one of the best performing systems, that out of 62, the report said that in 62 trials in total, it had demonstrated the ability to comply with California's performance standards. But when we looked at the test reports, it had actually met California standards in only 5 of those trials. In 34, the tests were invalid. In 4 cases in which the report says that it demonstrated compliance with California standards, there were no tests done. And in 17 cases, it failed to meet California standards by large margins. And so this kind of pattern exists across all of the data reported. And because of that, I believe that the conclusions of the report are incorrect as well. These remain my concerns. Now, I've offered back with Chris and then repeatedly with other staff and all the way up to the executive director at times and in the meetings with Commissioner Gordon to sit down with staff and go through these data. And if I was wrong, they could show me where I was wrong. But if not, then they could fix the problem. Those offers were never taken up. John Berg and I did finally bring this data to Commissioner Gordon about 2 months ago and to Chris Garland last week. At the time, it seemed like you found the presentation convincing, but of course you had only heard my presentation of it and not other information you might have heard from staff. I had thought that I was, after talking to Chris, that I was going to be here to present that information and see what staff's response would be. I learned yesterday that wouldn't happen. But and I was told it wouldn't happen because staff had demonstrated that the information we brought forward was incorrect. The analysis we brought forward was incorrect. And my request at this point is we actually take a look at that and staff show me and show the other people here who've seen this information and found it convincing why it's incorrect. Show us why the what seems to be very clear that the test report data is not being accurately represented on in the current report. And I don't know why. I'm not suggesting any reason, any intent or anything like that. I'm going to make very clear of that. It's just the data appears to be wrong.
Thank you. Any questions for this speaker?
No.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
We're not to get the explanation of why this is wrong.
I'm going to ask a very simple question of staff, and your speaking time is concluded. Is staff confident in the data being presented in this report is correct?
We're confident in our analysis. We've spent putting additional information into this last draft of the report to clearly lay out why we made the presented the data as we did. We're not saying that necessarily that Dr. Cohen is wrong. We're saying that there are different ways of interpreting data, just as there are different ways of interpreting the law for legal analyses. We chose a certain tack. We clearly laid out for transparency purposes why we chose that tack, and we stand by our analysis.
Thank you.
We're never going to get an explanation in that case?
That sounded like a reasonable explanation to me. Thank you for your time. Have a great weekend. Any other concerns by the commission?
Make a motion to adopt the report.
Tim.
No problem. Commissioners, Tim Schott on behalf of the California Association of Port Authorities again. It's been a long time coming. We thank staff and we thank the commission for continuing to work with everybody on this report. I think that our members, while recognizing it may not be perfect, are in the position of feeling that we need to continue to move forward. And we hope that as we consider the standard going forward and figure out how to meet it in the long term, that we recognize that the ports are facing a competitive marketplace that we have not seen in the past, and we think it's a critical component of everybody's considerations and hope that we'll continue to consider that here at the State Lands Commission and at the state in general. Thank you.
Commissioner Gordon?
Here's where I see us at this point in time. I think the report very accurately states that there are no current onboard systems that meet the California standards. How the data is interpreted with regard to which tests and compliance protocols is up for debate, but I am completely confident that what is in the report today serves the purpose of the report, which is to reach the conclusion that we cannot implement these standards based on the systems that are out there. The report indicate we know that we need to look at onshore and see how that might work. And we recognize that we need an abeyance of the existing statute for 2 years while we move forward. So while scientists in good faith can debate what the existing data shows, the conclusions that all parties have reached, which are that these systems that exist cannot meet California standards, are very clearly stated in the report, and by taking Mark Holmes' recommendation and others and Dr. McDowell, that we put a time certain of 2 years on the statutory change that we will ask the legislature for, I think we will continue to drive the debate. Not the debate, but we'll drive the technology that companies that are out there working on this will know that if they can meet that very strict standard in the future, that this commission will be in a position to mandate the use of that technology going forward. So at least for this commissioner, I am very comfortable with the report the way it currently reads. It serves its purpose. It is a analysis of where the systems are today, and I don't think it can be misinterpreted by anybody who is reading it, which had been my ongoing concern about previous drafts. So again, I think all of the parties that worked on this got to a place where the report will serve a useful function, and for this commissioner, I am ready to vote for the staff recommendation with the amendment that there be a 2-year request in the legislation going forward, that we are going to bring, that we are going to propose that there be a 2-year abeyance of the existing enforcement.
Okay.
I'm fine with that. I'm kind of in an awkward position here in that the director normally doesn't support legislation. So if we could, at this point in time, but I understand what we're talking about, and so if I can, you know what I'm saying, is do this in a way that doesn't show
I think the way to go here, and I think that's the reason why in the staff recommendations for the actual motion, there is no legislative language there. I think the easiest way for us to do this would be for us to adopt the recommendations and then direct the staff to move forward on legislation.
Okay. Let me restate my motion. I would move to adopt the staff recommendation, and let's cut it at that right there.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
So we have a motion.
That I would
Do
second.
I have a second? We have a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. I can't vote here, but I would like it on the record that you're in favor of this.
If you could vote.
If I could vote.
And then we would like to direct
the director or
the executive director that in drafting legislation that it take into account the conversation that was held here today and the recommendation of all the parties in the room that there be a time certain of 2 years in the legislation.
Will do.
And just on that point, one final thing from me, which would be to, there are a lot of advocates in this room and a lot of organizations that have excellent advocates working in this building, and I would like to suggest that if you could support us not just here, but Ms. Pemberton and her work inside this building, it would be great if the advocates would join with her when we do go to the legislature to get these changes. That would be much appreciated. And with that, we are, that's the end of the regular calendar. Do we have any
public
other
comment?
It's public comment now?
Yes, it's public comment now, and I believe
we have one,
about five speakers.
Oh, we've had more show up. Oh, here we go.
All right.
Jeff Carruthers, followed by Allison Madden, and then Wendy Stone. Welcome, Mr. Carruthers.
Thank you. Appreciate your time. My name is Jeff Carruthers. I'm an oceanographer for a company called Fugro West. We are involved mainly in earth sciences, both on and offshore. More specifically, my group makes maps of the ocean floor and also what's below the ocean floor, the soils, and characterizes the soils below the ocean floor. The subject I want to address today to the commission is concerning the geophysical survey permits and the state land issues for companies as my own to work in state waters. We received a letter from staff on Ms. Lucchese's letterhead in March 11th saying that a new CEQA document is being prepared that looks at these offshore surveys, acoustic parameters on marine wildlife. The letter also states that until this process has been completed and the staff has analyzed the data and the report, no further geophysical survey permits would be issued. The letter quotes would be March or out in the summer of 2013 for public comment period. We still haven't seen it yet, although I know the original plan was much earlier in the year to February was the first thing we heard. When this has been in progress for a while. Our concern is all the permits expire September 30th, which means companies like mine will not be able to survey on the ocean after September 30th until staff completes their acceptance of the new CEQA document and has taken that public comment. I think, and we believe time's running out. Last month the letter stated they would not process any permits, but we are allowed to submit permits. So we submitted a permit with a letter stating our concern that we'd like to have interim permits until this state thing is settled, that CEQA documents have been prepared. There is some precedence here. First, we went ahead and submitted our plan, and a lot of our work has to do with the state. It's for the state. The commission, we believe the commission has a legal obligation to issue us an interim permit in instances such as this It was affirmed by the courts in the case of Meridian Ocean Systems versus California State Lands Commission in 1990. In that case, the court held that surveyors like Fugger West are entitled to interim permits pending the commission's completion of a final environmental CEQA document. Without that, we basically have to stop work order September 30th. We cannot work anymore. This leads to a lot of different things. And my time's running out here, but our basic thing is request an interim permit until this is all sorted out so we can continue working. I get kids to feed. Also, many companies, many boats use the same equipment we do. Fishermen have the same type of equipment we have. Commercial fishermen, big ships, tankers, freighters, the people you're talking about with the ballast water, they use sonars, forward-looking sonars for obstacle avoidance. We do not want those a tanker or a freighter hitting something. But they're allowed to go into state waters using basically the same equipment we use without a permit or anything. So unless the state can not single us out as a professional survey company, when we're using the same equipment all the commercial fishermen are using, the pleasure boaters want. So anyway, bottom line is, I appreciate your time. We would ask for a interim permit if staff cannot get the permits issued by September 30th.
I appreciate you bringing this to our attention. And while this is not on the agenda for any action today, I would like to hear from staff and then before we move on to public comment.
Yeah. Well, first, why don't I have Cy Oggins, our chief of our environmental and planning unit, describe where we are in the process for the MND. And as he's making his way up here, as background, the commission has been operating under a 1984 mitigated neg DEC. We have been wanting to adopt a new mitigated neg DEC, one that is more timely. However, we have not had the funding to do so. We were recently granted the funding by the Ocean Protection Council, and we have started the process for a new MND. During that process, we also decided, because of the significance of these types of activities, to have that MND peer-reviewed. In light of the letter from Fugro, we have decided to speed up the process, and instead we were going to issue or send out the draft, the administrative draft of the MND, to this independent peer review panel, and then after getting results from that, then release it to the public. In light of the concerns about the timeliness, we have decided to proceed with those efforts in parallel. So at the same time we're sending it out to the peer review panel, we are also sending out to the public for public comment, and with the hopes that that could speed up the process. But at this time, and I sympathize greatly with the position that Fugro and other companies are in, but at this time, staff is not comfortable from a legal position to bring an interim permit when we're in the process of completing a new mitigated neg DEC under CEQA.
What's the time frame for the mitigated neg DEC at this point?
I defer to Cy on this.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Cy Oggins. I'm chief of environmental planning. The current schedule is to release the document in early July. Due to the complexity of the issues and the public comment that was received on the seismic survey for PG&E, we have planned a 45-day public review period to give the public a little more opportunity to speak, to provide comments, instead of the normal 30-day. So it looks like we would be done with the peer with the public review and, as Jennifer said, the peer review in mid to late August. So it would be right now not be able to take it to the commission meeting in August. And if I could just, Jennifer provided a really good summary of what has happened on the project. If I could just add that when the commission did get the funding from the Ocean Protection Council, there were several speakers who attended that meeting before the Ocean Protection Council voted to approve the funding, who really requested this peer review by the Ocean Science Trust. So we feel it is a very critical component of what we bring to the commission. Thank you.
And I appreciate that, and actually agree with the idea that the peer review is essential. But from what I'm hearing now, and I'm sorry, I'm going to ask you to jump back in here, sir, Mr. Carruthers.
Yes.
September 30th is when you were?
September 30th, all permits are finished. They're up for renewal September 30th. We do not believe this peer review, public comment period, and it also states in the letter the commission must, until or unless the commission adopts the new document, MDEC, we don't know what that means, unless or until. I mean, does that mean that this could go on for years and I'm out of business?
That's my concern. I would say that the answer, I'm not a lawyer, don't play one on TV, but I'm going to ask one of our three, or actually four, attorneys. I don't think that's what we mean by that. I don't think that's what we mean by unless and until, but...
It's Mark Meyer, Chief Counsel. We have to preface that as unless and or until, because we cannot presuppose what the commission is going to decide. It's entirely up to the commission. We believe that staff will the staff will bring a good document that the commission can use, but it's at the commission's discretion whether or not to adopt that.
When is our next hearing scheduled after this?
August 21st, I believe.
All right.
And then after that, we're in October.
October. Mr. Frueger, how about you? Is your company, do you have any ballpark as to how many businesses are affected by this particular situation?
Let me give you one example. There's about, I think Cy would, or Ms. Casey would know, seven or eight permit holders right now. Yeah. Of various sizes. This is a fairly small company. It's average probably 20 employees each. So we're a couple hundred people maybe.
Okay.
Let me show you one instance of where this will have a major impact. Talked to the Corps of Engineers. They're dredging San Diego Harbor, okay, and this is what they do normally. They take the disposal material, move it offshore, create a berm, and this particular one we're bidding right now with the surveys, create an offshore berm off Imperial Beach in San Diego. They're very clever at the Corps. They know that berm will eventually wash up and replenish the beach. Well, as it stands right now, this will be happening in September or October, nobody can survey that berm. We won't know how big it is, if they got enough sand in the right place or anything. So this is, and I'm confused why we're even in the mineral resources management, why we're even talking to them, because we don't do mineral resources. That's not our job. We study habitat, marine habitat, things like that. we actually have a job scheduled to start late September. I mean, if you get indulge me for another second here, of the San Francisco Bay, and it's being funded. It'll start in late September, early October. It's being funded by the State of California, the Ocean Protection Council, and the State Coastal Conservancy. They don't seem to have a problem with the survey.
And you've got a contract to begin that.
Yes, we do. And we can't unless we get...
And I'm assuming there would probably be a liquidated damages clause in that contract if the state were not able to perform.
I don't think there's LDs in that one, but there. The idea is the people that are funding this are the same people that are wanting to study on. And let me say one more thing, if you don't mind, just indulge me one more second. We have no problem with a new MDEC. We don't. We think it's necessary as well. Okay. The problem I see is the timing of it. If September 30th comes and all the, pardon me, the political part hasn't been worked out, we're shut out. We got a stop work order. Yeah. We cannot work. We cannot talk to help the Corps with their project. I've talked to the Corps. They're concerned. I'm going to meet Sunday with the new Pacific Division head of the Corps of Engineers and kind of explain this to them for their future dredging projects. But it's a bit serious.
So let me see if where we are right now. So, Cy, if you guys get your work done and have the 45-day public comment period, you can be back before us at our August 20th.
Mm-mm. No, we would miss the August meeting. We want to be sure that we respond to public comments and that we incorporate those comments into the document that we bring to the commission. Plus, we have our noticing requirements to do proper notice before the commission meeting.
So we do have then. And how many days is the public is the notice before? If we were to hold a special meeting in September,
10 days.
So we've really got up until about September, let's say 19th. To get this done, and then notice a special meeting so that we can come and if the neg deck is finished, adopt it. Correct?
That's correct.
Which is at this point in time, from what I'm hearing from counsel, it's really the only thing that we can do. We are not legally we would be have problems if we gave the interim permits. So that's not an option for us. But sir, let me say, at least from this commissioner's perspective, and I think I'm seeing nodding over here, mm-hmm. that we will come back in September, assuming we have this thing all set up, and we'll do a special hearing so that we can get this thing done so that you folks are not put out of business.
I appreciate that. Well, that's our main concern. Like I said, we're not against the new CEQA document. We just want to be able to continue our work.
And thanks for coming for us. I'm glad you brought this issue before us, and it's now on the radar, and we will do everything we can to make sure that it's taken care of.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir.
Have a great weekend. Our next public comments are Allison Madden, Wendy Stone, Buckley Stone, and Eric Pease. Ms. Madden, good to see you again.
Hi, thank you.
You may proceed.
Okay. So happy 75th to the commission, not personally. I'm here to advocate that on day 61, there's a current 60-day notice of breach at Pete's Harbor. And I'd like the state to terminate the leases on day 61. And the reason why is not out of spite or ill will, but really to take control and to take charge. I think without a strong arm, without a strong position, the parties aren't going to be able to come together and work this out the way the commission wants to globally. I think you know your charge, which under the PSC is to act in the best interests of the people of the state of California, not one landlord, one tenant, one developer, or even one city. And the harbor has taken the prior position that some input by the SLC has been a command to dismantle and blockade docks, which I think almost no one else agrees with. We think that the wholesale abandonment has compromised or at least put the docks at risk and is causing waste, which even justifies unlawful detainer against the harbor. So one of the remedies under the lease is to repossess the slough and to take immediate possession without notice upon expiration of that 60 days. And the reason I would advocate this is just to keep all options preserved. Other speakers will speak in more detail, but right now there is a security fence with a chain, a lock, armed guards, and barbed wire around the facility. I would like to say that you would not be interfering with property rights because the general plan of Redwood City, enacted in 2010 after much public input, said we're going to keep the harbor and the liveaboards, which can be operated within BCDC guidelines, so you would not be harming any reasonable investment-backed expectation. Also, I would like to move on to the next issue, which is the easement. There's an easement in the lease. It says it's for the state. However, in the PRC, it's clear that the state's easements are for access by the public. And right now, while there is an effective lease, I believe the public can't be blocked out by this barbed wire, which, by the way, is probably contrary to code in Redwood City, and we're having them call us back now. So we think the public should be able to move to and among the docks. People are used to going down there with dogs and bikes, and they're being met by armed guards at this time. The third thing I'd like to talk about is comity, which is the Attorney General often argues in the cases. The legal jargon is prior resort, preliminary jurisdiction, prior jurisdiction, to defer, to refer, to abstain, exhaustion, election, all of this. But all of that aside, when you wade through it, what it is, it's an argument that there is a specialized agency, and in this case, it's the State Lands Commission, with expertise. And here, you know, you have your 75th anniversary here. We think it would be a good precedent. There's Judge Buchwald of the Superior Court in San Mateo County, who's really a judge's judge, and he clerked for the Supreme Court, and he's been on the bench for quite some time. He gave the unlawful detainer a four-day hearing, four-day trial, and he is having a special hearing on July 1st. He's given a special notice, an invitation for a representative of the SLC to attend. We would want that to be neutral and just to state really the position of staff and the commission to date, to not take a side, to not be intervening in one case. But really what he has done is looked at the entire picture. The test that I think the Attorney General runs into a lot is whether you are adjudicatory, but there's no Supreme Court precedent for the fact that you have to be an adjudicatory body. We think it would be a good precedent. There would be a case number to refer to that a very competent and thoughtful judge, I argued for a full stay. I'll wrap it up. I argued for a full stay, but he actually did stay entry of his judgment in order to give the SLC a time to appear. And I said you're quasi-everything. You're clearly quasi-executive, adjudicatory. I think you hold hearings. You determine property rights. You can issue cease and desist. So I think you have every power that there is under the government to act. And so we'd really love to see you there.
Thank you. Wendy Stone.
Hi, I'm Wendy Stone from Pete's Harbor. So going after Allison, there's really nothing left to say except IBID, and thanks for listening to us. It's so difficult to see barbed wire, armed guards, and everybody being turned away right now, especially before July 4th. It's sad. I don't want to see Pete's Harbor closed, no matter what's going to happen after this. And if we're gone or whatever, that's one thing. But we've stayed. There's four of us left now, and they're trying to get rid of us like crazy. I don't think of us as just people that are being stubborn. I think of us as people that are representing the people and the public of California. This place should stay a marina. It really should. And I don't think some huge development should be put on there by these guys from Denver. I've seen their stuff. It's not pretty, and I don't think it's going to work there anyway on landfill. Anyway, just want to say hope somebody shows up July 1st because we could use your help. Not that you're going to be biased, of course. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Wendy. Have a great weekend. Thank you. Buckley Stone.
I'm back.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Wouldn't be a meeting without you.
I think we're living in false imprisonment. I'm almost sure we could get rid of habeas corpus. Almost sure. Over the weekend, they put up 8-foot chain link fences and barbed wire across the top, and now we have armed guards 24/7. So when we leave, the guard has to let us out, and when we come back, we have to show them our ID to get in. I think we're going to call it Pete's Penitentiary. It's like an internment camp. It's really scary. So I'm talking to the city about that because it turns out that on private property, barbed wire is not allowed. Well, for commercial places, you know, that's different. But anyway, we're here to encourage you to come. Please come to Redwood City on July 1st. Judge Buchwald has sent you an invitation, and it's not to interfere with voters against Paula or development. It's not about us. It's about the judge. Judge Buchwald has done something that's going to go in the books. A standard UD shouldn't take more than 4 hours. It's to protect a landowner, a landlord, get rid of a bad tenant, get him back in business, and keep going. We have been seeing this judge for we're heading on 12 hours, and he's like, wow, So he has really opened the door for discussion about the unique circumstances here at Pete's. And what's unique about it, as you'll know, but I will reiterate, is that it's publicly deeded property. It's a beautiful place for a marina. It's been well kept. It's almost dreamy because it's so in the right place. It's your property. It's our property. And seriously, kids, dogs, what's supposed to happen at the 4th of July is people come in with their lawn chairs and barbecues and kids and frisbees and dogs, and everybody waits because the barge is right out there. It's going to light off the fireworks. There's only one way in and one way out, okay? So I called the fire department and said, is this okay with you? They came down there. They whittled their way through the gate. Right behind them, there's a Jeep boardwalk. There's a whole bunch of auto dealers. And they park along there with the car carriers and unload them. And then they used to go down to Pete's, turn around, and go out. Well, one of these car carriers came in behind the fire engine. And suddenly he couldn't turn around, which meant he had to back up all the way back up Bear Island. This huge, and the fire truck was stuck inside. And it was like, that's what I was talking about. And so what's going to happen is unless somebody puts up a huge sign before people get off the freeway that says, don't go to Pete's for fireworks, there's going to be hundreds of cars coming down there and being turned around. And I talked to one of the security guards there, and I said, you know what's going to happen on the 4th? And he goes, yes, I've been security for 5 years here during, you know, when everybody comes in, fireworks go off, and it takes them 2 hours to leave. You know, it's an event. And this time, they're going to be faced with armed guards and barbed wire and Stalag 19. I mean, it's just going to be a mess. We are asking you to come down and help Judge Buchwald. Help him make a decision on what's best or which course should be followed. Please. All right?
Thank you for your comment. Have a great weekend, Buckley.
Thank you for your guys' help. I sure appreciate it.
And then finally, we have Eric Pease. Welcome, Mr. Pease.
Good day. Hello, and thanks for having me here. I am also one of the last remaining tenants at Pete's Harbor and the only tenant in the Outer Harbor. Okay. I was here in February, and I had commented on everybody being terrorized into leaving, and that has not changed. With the addition of the 8 to 10 foot fencing and the barbed wire, they're continuing their policy of terror against the people that are still there. I would think their money would be better spent in trying to fulfill the precepts that you have dictated to them to keep the lease going the way it's supposed to be and have public access. They are spending money hand over fist to prevent that rather than to comply with that. So I have friends, family members, associates, including my son, has been questioned by an armed guard coming out of the bathroom. He's 16 years old. He didn't want to spend Father's Day with me because his father lives in a gulag. It's sad. It's so sad it's comical on his face. I've been around. I've done security work. There's no reason for the type of attitude this one individual has. She's either getting bad legal advice or doesn't care. I have to listen to my landlord. I lived in a condominium complex. There's homeowners association rules. If you don't follow them, you're gone. Okay? She's not following the rules. Please, please don't extend her lease for any given reason. She doesn't care about the public. She's turning away guests. I mean, I'm allowed to have a guest. I still live there. I haven't had a court date assigned. I'm not under a court order to leave. And she's turned away guests of mine. She's actually happened by happenstance to be outside while a guest of mine came up. And there, she basically said, you can't come in. I'm shocked. I'm just shocked. Please. Don't extend this woman's lease. She doesn't care about the public access to the marina, regardless of the holiday. People can't walk their dogs. People can't play with their kids. I know people don't come down to fly kites anymore. It's a ghost town, and she's just terrorizing the town. It's sad on his face. And I see that my time's almost up, and please, if there's a God in heaven, don't extend this woman's lease. Please come and talk to the judge on the 1st, and without taking any sides, explain to them what you would like to see happen with your property. It's not her property. She spouts out that it's her property and she'll do what she wants, but it's not. It's yours. And she's not doing what you're asking her to do. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. You have a great, good weekend. Do any of the commissioners have any other comments for open session?
No, I don't. Thank you.
In that case, that concludes the open meeting. We'll now adjourn into closed session, and we'd ask the public to please leave the room. Thank you. All right, we've come back in from closed session. Executive officer, is there anything to report from the closed session and open session? No. In that case, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
One second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned.
stuff in your pile.
Sorry.